Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Jane Steinberg.
So we're going here to look at the genesis of this government UFO study that the funding, at least, was handed off to Bigelow. Now, if one wants to talk politics, Bigelow was a supporter of Senator Reid, right?
He was. I mean, they were friends. Yep. Nobody's pretending otherwise regarding that.
And we're talking here about $22 million to start. That's, in terms of government, that can buy a couple of toilet seats.
Exactly. It's not much
not
at
a big
all.
Deal.
And then after that was, you know, there was no more funding that came after that. They were supposed to receive more funding, but it never ended up with the program. It ended up somewhere else within the Department of Defense. After that period of time, I think it was starting in around 2012, the program continued to function without a budget. And it did not shut down. It kept on going. It just didn't have these contractors to work with anymore, but it had access to other branches of government. It had connections to people in the Navy and the CIA and was able to make use of resources, let's say, that would help them investigate various cases. So even without this designated budget, they were able to still accomplish a lot of the work they wanted to do. Although, again, with frustration that there weren't more resources, which is one of the reasons Elizondo left. And it was an uphill battle. Plus, a lot of the people within the department did not think highly of them doing this work. Nonetheless, they managed to keep going. And the program is ongoing today. So to whatever extent people might think that that's not the case, I know that it is, that the program is still functioning. And some people will bicker over the language. Is it a program? Maybe that's not the correct word for it. You know, if you want to get into semantics, I don't know, but I don't get involved in, as you said, a lot of the stuff that goes on around all of this. But there are still a group of people within the DOD who are carrying on the work that was going on before Elizondo resigned. That work is still going forward now.
So this is nothing in the line item in the budget, or maybe they're using existing resources. What struck me as interesting, though, is we have this project beginning in the early 2000s. We had Project Blue Book, which ended in 1969. What happened in the interim?
Wouldn't we love to know more about that, right? I wish, the fact that this program existed and we didn't know anything about it makes you wonder what existed during all those years. I don't know. I don't know any more than anyone else, although I'm quite certain there certainly were, if not programs, certainly individuals within various agencies who took this seriously and worked on it. I mean, that's, you can be sure about that. But I don't know what we don't know, so.
That's true. That's very, that's the only reason I was asking some of these questions was to try to clarify some of that. And I think you make a really good case there that a program like this maybe wasn't set up as an official department. So it was a lot more ad hoc, and that could explain why we don't have some of the kind of documentation that people would like to see that confirms in no uncertain terms exactly what was going on. But what we do seem to know with absolute certainty is that there was an investigation going on that was official within the Defense Intelligence Agency. That was part of the military, and that they were taking these objects, whatever they were, very seriously.
Right. And then it actually moved from the DIA into the DOD. I mean, they're all interconnected. It's not, it's considered to be a Department of Defense program. And yeah, that's absolutely correct. And I think that given the nature of this program, it's the kind of entity that is very hard to get information about a group like this through the FOIA. If you can't get that information, it doesn't mean that therefore what you've been requested doesn't exist, or that, that something is different than what people have said. It just means that those documents are not accessible to the person in the FOIA office who's dealing with the request. And there are hundreds of programs within the Department of Defense that are like this one, that are small, unknown and buried programs. And you can be certain that there are many of those that are not going to be the people who write for FOIAs about them are not going to get information. It's just the way it is. So I was, you know, as disappointing as it is, I have not been at all surprised that information hasn't come out, more information about this program. But to me, that doesn't change anything that I know about it, and doesn't change anything that we wrote about in our Time story.
It's pretty interesting that, say, someone like John Alexander, who was in the military himself, wrote UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies back in 2011 and claims to have researched all of this and also found nothing. And then all of a sudden this comes out.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, what did he say? Oh, I guess I was wrong or something. I don't know. But I mean, I think it shows how well hidden it was, because I think John Alexander was obviously a person with a lot of connections. I mean, enough connections that he made the assumption that if a program existed, he would know about it.
Right.
So there you go. That's a really interesting point. I mean, and there are many programs like this that, not just about UFOs, but this is what I've been told by people involved with the Defense Department, about all kinds of topics that are sensitive. There are programs like this, and people just don't know about them, and it's very hard to find out about them. It's just the way it is.
Something else I find really interesting about this whole affair is we recently had, as Gene had mentioned, Gary Voorhees on as a guest, and he was aboard one of the ships in the Nimitz encounters. Mm-hmm. And he was responsible for maintaining all of the technical equipment there. And he was saying that there were people that came onto the ship that took the information, the data recorders with them from the ship and flew off in a helicopter. Well, obviously, that stuff came out through Elizondo. So for the first time in history, we see how something like that happens, how it seems to disappear and go into some void someplace, but then actually does come out through the military, meaning that they obviously had it.
Right. I'm not sure that necessarily that the ATIP program had all the data on that incident. That one video was cleared for release to the public. But I suspect there's a lot more data on that case. And whether all of it was run through the ATIP program, I don't know. I mean, that would be an interesting question to ask, and I don't know if I would even get an answer about it. I think, you know, that the data that was confiscated maybe never ended up with ATIP. We don't know that. It might
exactly.
Be directly to the Navy or, you know, some other, the CIA or... I don't know. So we don't know who confiscated that or why or where it went.
Well, I guess the point I'm making is it seems to be reasonable to suggest, given the situation, that it all was within some military channels. In other words, it wasn't just some men in black who nobody knows about came along, took them, and nobody knows.
Right.
Because what we did get did come back out of the military from someplace.
Exactly. We got the video. We got some other data on the case. And I think you're absolutely right that information was provided to somebody within an agency within our government who wanted to study it or make use of it.
Which means somebody must know. Have you done any, bloodhound tracking to try and find out exactly where that is or who those people are at all?
Not. We haven't been able to find out. I mean, so much of this is classified, and when things are classified, you know, you just bump up. It's like bumping up against a brick wall. You can ask, you get to a certain point, and then it's like, can't go any further. It's just out of reach. And so that's what happens with a lot of this information. And, you know, we had this intention, this belief after doing the first story in the Times that we would be able to do more. And we had even made statements along those lines. And I, you know, in retrospect, that might have been a mistake because we soon learned that so much of what we wanted to follow up on and report on was just information that was not going to be given to us.
What? We're exploring the genesis and the ongoing research for the Department of Defense, the things that Leslie Kane and her associates had discovered, and we got more to come. And a little bit later, we'll talk a little bit about her other book, Surviving Death. We've got more to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement? You bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Do you think, Leslie, that really they didn't want this to come out in public anyway? And maybe if Elizondo had not left his job, it may have just been a secret.
That's quite possible. Yes, I think his leaving the job was a major turning point. And a lot of information that came out as a result of that would not have come out otherwise. I think that's true.
For your journey, what are some of the high points for you? I mean, of course, you were on the Colbert Reports. So can you describe the sort of the feelings that it gave you to suddenly bring all of this out, crack through, and get into the limelight, so to speak, as a journalist?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Colbert Report. I think that was absolutely one of the highlights of my life, and certainly of any media that I've ever done. And I've done probably just about all the major media. That interview with Stephen Colbert was in a class by itself.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. It was the most challenging and the most exhilarating, both, and the scariest, all of that thing I'd ever done, really. It was just, I'll never forget it. It was amazing to be sitting. I mean, I just can't believe it. And I really had to get myself into the absolute right mindset before I could do it. And fortunately, I had time to do that because you get there hours before you go on. And anyway, it was really, really an amazing experience. And I think he's absolutely incredible. And, you know, that same week, I also did MSNBC and Michio Kaku went on MSNBC. I think it was the same night I was on Colbert even, just to talk about my book. I mean, they sort of had him on as someone to interview about my book because he had written a blurb for it. And then I went on MSNBC, and I might have done one other mainstream interview that week. And that's basically what put my book on the New York Times bestseller list. It was that kind of exposure because that was the week that it first was on the New York Times bestseller list. So I think I have Stephen Colbert to thank for that, quite honestly. Yeah, it was, you know, I knew that the book had a lot of important information in it. And, you know, I thought it should really blow people's minds, but I really had no idea whether it would or not or what would happen. So it was quite a ride, and it was really a surprise to me how much attention it did generate. Yeah, it was a very, very exhilarating time.
I would say that from there, that was the final stretch to cracking the ice on this, so to speak. And I'm kind of wondering now, so where do we go from here? We had Stephen Bassett on not too long ago. It's like yes, there was no question that was sort of the final leg of the journey to the point that we're at now. And now it was recently we had Stephen Bassett on. And of course, Stephen always talks about disclosure, and it seemed for a moment there with all of the publicity that was happening that we might just get it. Did you feel that we were close at one point yourself as well?
I guess it depends on, I mean, I have a lot of issue with the word disclosure. I don't even use it or ever talk about it. So I'd have to know exactly what you mean by that word before I could really comment on whether, you know, whether we have it or not.
Well, I guess the big D disclosure is where, well, now we've got people who were former military people in positions that were verifiable coming out saying that there were genuine programs by the government to look into the phenomena. But there are people who have had to quit or maybe become whistleblowers, you might call them. What we're looking for is for people who are currently employed to come out and say, this is what we have, and show us all of that information that's hidden in behind the scenes that we know must be there, but haven't got access to. That brick wall that you were describing that you would run up against when you would ask for things.
Yeah. I mean, certainly we've had active duty investigators from other countries who are government officials from those countries who have acknowledged the reality of UFOs. Now, maybe you could say that's some kind of official disclosure that has taken place in those countries, like Chile and France are two examples. And I had other, you know, I had in my book, chapters written by people who were officials working for the French government, et cetera. But of course, America is where it really matters. So I think that, you know, Elizondo coming forward was a big step, but I don't think that there's going to be some big moment where we have this disclosure as people imagine it. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, we know that UFOs are real and that they exist. And I think the government has already acknowledged that through the countless documents that have been released starting in the 1940s and 50s and all the way through. There are government documents that show that there is a real phenomenon here and that our government's been interested in it. And then there are also individuals who have spoken about that. And one of the more recent important ones was Elizondo when he first left the Pentagon. So I don't expect to see every single bit of classified information released all of a sudden to the public. That's just not going to happen. And there's a lot of reasons why that won't happen. So I just think there's not going to be some big moment that people are looking for. I see it more as a gradual process. And I see it more now as some people talk about confirmation now, that we're talking about confirming the reality rather than establishing the reality, because we know already that the reality, the UFOs exist and that they're physical. We know what their properties are. You know, they're in documents, they're in videos, their officials from around the world have talked about their reality. I just can't imagine, you know, that's really in any dispute anymore.
I would have to agree with you definitely from my position as a ufologist, at least. But then there's still people out there who haven't done their homework, like you and I have, who still think that there's just not enough and it's not really that important to their lives, and they just don't care, and they just kind of deny that it's out there. What's your reaction to those sort of people?
Well, I mean, I feel if somebody's not interested in it, they have every right not to be interested in it. I mean, I can understand why many people wouldn't be interested in it who are just concerned about their main, you know, having a job and raising a family and their day-to-day lives, and I thoroughly respect that. I think dismissing it out of hand when you're not informed, you know, is not something I would respect too much. But people do that all the time with all kinds of topics. You know, everybody has opinions about things they're not informed about.
Let's break it here, Leslie. I just wanted to say a few words about our other radio show, After the Paracast. It's available exclusively to members of the Paracast Plus. We also offer a version of this show that's free of the network ads. How about that? For more information, go to theparacast.plus. And one more thing, Leslie Kane will continue her discussions on this weekend's After the Paracast. More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Freed momentarily from the Senate's impeachment trial, several presidential candidates hightailed into Iowa for last-minute campaigning before the state's caucuses kick off the battle for the Democratic nomination. Senators Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, and Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii plan to hold town halls, rallies, and concerts across Iowa to keep their supporters motivated into the final stretch of the campaign. They'll join former Vice President Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg
Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, who does not have any Senate obligations and already spent much of the past week in Iowa. China's leader called the accelerating spread of a new coronavirus a very grave situation as cities from the outbreak's epicenter in central China to Hong Kong scrambled to contain an illness that has now infected more than 1,200 people and killed at least 41. This is USA Radio News.
Our U.S. Constitution is amazing. It's full of what's called negative rights, designed to protect us from the corrupt powers of a dictatorship.
Like our right to worship our own God, not some official state religion.
Our right to prevent the government from seizing our property without paying fair market value for it.
Or our right to be tried by a jury of our peers, people like us, not by some star tribunal.
And that's why America has become the richest, most just society in the world.
Other countries force so-called positive rights onto their citizens. These enable one group to take from another group their free speech, money, and choice by using government force. Socialists love wielding this power over people.
Sometimes we take our freedoms for granted, but we can lose our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and become like Venezuela or North Korea, failed, brutal socialist regimes.
We need your help to spread the good news about our amazing U.S. Constitution. Help us take back America. Go to OurAmericanRights.com.
Brought to you by the American Media Council.
I'm here with Scott Youseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Leslie Kane's with us. We're talking about the new prominence in UFOs and where it might take us. And you used a term, Leslie, and you probably haven't heard me use it, a gradual disclosure, where it's not going to be the mass landing. That would obviously be in the hands of something or someone else. It wouldn't be the President of the United States or the dictators out there, Putin or the leader of China or any of these people getting up there and saying, hey, we are being visited. It is something that we will wake up one day and we've accepted everything after a number of years.
Yeah, maybe. Or if there is some astonishing, you know, undeniable manifestation, I mean, you know, some massive flyover over a big city that's filmed, and you know, there could be some UFO event that would make it absolutely impossible to deny it and that would force some kind of acknowledgement of something that we can't explain. I mean, that's conceivable. That, of course, is in the hands of the phenomenon and not in our hands, and we never know if that's going to happen or not. So that's one way things could change drastically. But I think if nothing along those lines happens and we just continue the way we are now with an occasional case here and there and people seeing things and reporting things, I mean, I think then it is going to be gradual. We're going to have events that happen, such as we had with discovering this Pentagon program. They're going to move everything forward. But I don't think that, you know, the government officials who were involved with this, certainly within the Pentagon, have no desire to release what they know to our adversaries. And there's, you know, they're studying how these things do what they do. They're trying to understand it. That's something that there's a sort of competitive edge around. So there's a lot of reasons along those lines of why we're not going to want to release information that we have and things that we learn about the objects. And that's understandable to me.
What I wonder about here, too, is because I mentioned Russia and China and other countries, maybe Japan or something. We assume the major developed countries all have UFO-related experiences. We have the books, we have the reports. We know it's happening around the world. There's a book about UFOs in Russia. We might bring on the author sometime. But the thing is here, are these respective governments having independent programs? What's to stop someone from getting up there and saying something before somebody else does?
You mean somebody from one of those programs?
Putin comes up and says, hey, the Russians have discovered, but we have this phenomenon called UFOs, UAPs, whatever they call it in Russia, and want to be the first one, the point person.
I just don't think, I mean, I know there's a sort of, I just don't think that that's how it works. I don't think that anyone's going to care about being the first one. I mean, this is not an issue that is in the forefront of the minds of people who run the world, you know, who are the world leaders. I think there's a sense among people in the UFO community that it's so important to them that somehow this has got to be of equal importance to all these other people out there who are in positions of power. And that just isn't the case. You know, this is not the highest priority issue for people. And so I don't think there's some kind of competitive thing going on about who's going to be the first to acknowledge it. And people are sitting in their rooms discussing the strategies for how to handle this. And, you know, all these things that I hear talked about, which I, you know, to be honest, I don't listen to them very much. So there may be things that I'm not informed about that people are saying, but I just don't have a sense that it works that way. You know, there's a competitive edge. I mean, if the Russians are doing secretive classified work the same way we are in America, they're going to want to keep that to themselves, just like we want to keep it to ourselves. And nobody's in any rush to kind of make some big announcement about it. And I don't think they have all the answers yet anyway.
I think that's a really valid observation. Thank you for your perspective on that. Because as a journalist, you are somewhat more at arm's length than, say, someone who is what we might call the true believers, the ones who believe they're in communication with aliens and sending them telepathic messages and all the rest. What is it that keeps you going that makes you believe that this is a worthy enough subject to devote so much time to than when there are so many bigger issues in the world that are more important?
Well, I mean, that's, to me personally, there aren't a lot of issues that are more important. It's all about your own personal orientation. And I was just saying, making the point that high level government officials, it's not the most important issue for them by a long shot. That's the point I was making. But for me personally, I'm absolutely, fixated and obsessed with this issue. I mean, I find it one of the most fascinating things that I have ever worked on, and I've been doing it for 20 years. So it's all a matter of what it means to you individually. That's all. And to me, it means a great deal. And I find it, because it's such an incredible mystery that, you know, these things are here and they develop extraordinary capacities. And yet we don't know, you know, where they're from or what they are or why they're here. All these things, these questions that remain unanswered. And I know that the experiencers have their own answers for some of those questions through their own experiences. And I respect that. And they could very well have the answers. But in terms of journalism, we have to have it come from other sources or it just doesn't fly. So I'm very interested in what people's experiences are. And I'm interested in close encounter experiences and all kinds of things. But that sort of is in the background. You know, that's for me a personal interest. It's not something that I can bring to my reporting unless we someday get the kind of documentation on it that would validate it at the level that's needed for something like the New York Times. It's very difficult to, there's so many interesting stories floating around, but to bring something to the New York Times, they have such a high standard and the bar is so high to do that, that you're very restricted about and what you can report on. And it's a good thing. Because that's why when you do report for the Times, it has such a huge impact. And everything is so carefully, so rigorously reported on and so carefully documented, because that's what the Times requires. And therefore, it has a major impact. So I'm happy about that. But it also means there's only a certain amount of articles that we are able to do for the Times.
Right. And editorializing isn't sort of what your job is on it. It's to report on it more than editorialize. But this is a more casual show. And we've got a question from one of our people in the forum.
Okay.
And while we're still talking about UFOs and abduction phenomena, and so some people just kind of might like to know, you know, your perspective as a person, just as an individual, rather than necessarily, you know, in the role of the reporter. And Ellendale asks, as someone who has been involved with the late Bud Hopkins, what are your personal thoughts on the alien abduction phenomenon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely intrigued by it. I'm fascinated by it. I've read about it. I know people who have had those experiences, and I respect them, and I believe that something has happened to them. So to me, it's just a huge mystery about what that is all about. And I would like to understand more about how all these sort of paranormal aspects of the UFO phenomenon intersect with the physical aspects of it. I've been focused on the physical aspects of it, but I know that the phenomenon itself is way more complicated than that. And the impact that it has on people, it has a lot of paranormal elements to it. And all of that is part of the bigger picture. So I have the greatest respect and interest in those experiences, and I'm not an expert on them, but I'm personally very interested in, and I'm always wanting to learn more about them. And I read, there's certain books that I think are really, I mean, one interesting book, it's called American Cosmic UFOs, Technology, Religion, written by Diana Pasulka, a professor of religion.
One more thing. We'd like you to visit our brand new official Paracast store. Just go to theparacast.shop. Once again, go to theparacast.shop to see all sorts of exclusive merchandise. More to come with Leslie Kane, Gene, and Randall. You're in
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
With more people listening to radio than visit Google, Facebook, or YouTube, from the very young to the very old, everyone listens to radio. Pillow companies, alarm, identity theft, nutrition, insurance, banking, automotive. The list goes on and on. Billion-dollar businesses. Why? The answer is radio. The media everyone tunes into. Find out how effective and affordable radio can be for your business. Contact 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of MyPillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book Is From the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we're taking maybe a logical next step here, as Leslie Cain cited a book in the previous segment, UFOs, the Paranormal. Moving into that, before we get back to that, and because you wrote the book Surviving Death, have you read about the apparent resemblances between an abduction experience and a near-death experience?
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of topic now that I'm starting to explore more. And I find that so fascinating. I mean, I've read about it in connection with Whitley Strieber in particular and his new book, which deals with that topic, because he's been in communication with his wife, Anne, who died. And there seems to be some kind of intersection between the realm of, if there is such a thing as a realm where people go when they die, and then the realm where these creatures that people think of as aliens are. And there's some kind of overlapping, and I'm sure there are people that know a lot more about that than I do. I mean, but it's something I'm very curious to know more about.
Just before the break, we were talking briefly about UFO abductions, and you had mentioned that you believe that people are having these experiences. I tend to feel much the same way, that these are genuine experiences that people are having. I don't know exactly how to explain them, but our forum participant, Ellendale, also asks in relation to that, what you think of David Jacobs in one of his latest books, where he claims that we're dealing with alien-human hybrids, and that they're actually secretly infiltrating human society.
Yeah, I just feel completely unable to have an opinion about that because I have no idea. I mean, I read the book, his book, Secret Life, I believe it was called. I don't remember, but the newer book that he wrote, I have not read yet. So I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, it's possible. And then the whole question of interbreeding among humans and aliens. I mean, it's so out there. I have no idea. And I haven't seen, obviously, as a journalist, I haven't seen any documentation on it that would satisfy me as a journalist. I mean, that goes without saying. So I don't feel really qualified to comment on it.
No, that's fair enough. I don't either. So it's an interesting story.
Yeah, it's so kind of out there. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, and his final question is, do you think that the current attention and more serious treatment the phenomenon is getting by the mainstream media is a passing fad that will eventually die off, or is there reason to believe that there might be a more profound shift underway, something more in the future where we're progressing more? What might that be?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think that it is a progression, that it is permanent, that I think that the impact. I mean, let's just use the New York Times articles as an example. I think the shift that has occurred as a result of those articles is not just going to disappear. I think it makes an impact. And that impact stays, basically, until the next shift comes and pushes it forward another step. But I don't think it goes backwards. I don't know if we had some president who was, like, belittling the topic or something. You know, somebody was actively doing something to make people doubt it. But I think as long as that doesn't happen, we're going to stay where we are, and hopefully we're going to move forward rather than backwards. I just don't see any reason why it wouldn't stay that way. And, you know, the fact that there are briefings, I mean, people may know that there have been briefings done for members of congressional committees since the New York Times articles came out, that the articles have opened a door for our elected representatives to feel comfortable taking it seriously and for being briefed on it. And that's a new development. So I don't think that's going to go away either. That's the way I see it. I think it's pretty solid.
Do you plan on staying in the field then yourself and seeing it through as far as you can then?
Yeah, I mean, my interest in being in the field now is reporting for the New York Times. That's what interests me. I don't spend a lot of time, you know, keeping up with all the stuff that goes on with the UFO community or that kind of stuff. Because I also have this other world of this body of research that I'm very involved with right now, which in some ways interests me even more than UFOs. But ultimately, I think I'm going to learn more about how to put them all together. And that has to do with my book called Surviving Death. And that book has occupied my focus for, I'd say, for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, pretty much. And so the work that I've done on UFOs in that time span has been really around reporting for the Times. And that's what I hope to continue doing. So, but I, again, I'm spending a lot of time on this other realm of stuff.
You are, however, going to be speaking at an upcoming conference. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking at the Contact in the Desert conference, which is the first UFO conference I've been to since I went to the International UFO Congress in, I think it was February of 2011. It was right after my book came out. I was at that conference, and I have not been to any conferences since. So this year, since my other book came out, which sort of deals with a lot of kind of weird stuff, I just felt like, you know, I'm going to go to this conference. Why not? And there's some other people going that I wanted to spend time with, and I just thought it would be an interesting experience, so I decided to do it. That's in the last weekend in May in California.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Maybe we can get you back for a shorter show after that, and you can tell us how it went. We have another question now, moving on then to Surviving Death, from Farlig Goldstein on the forum. And he's just wondering just what your opinion is on some ideas, basically. He says, in your opinion, since human cultures are full of gods, demons, tricksters, spirits, and so on, could there also be a non-human conscious entity that has never been embodied that might be behind some of this phenomena?
Wow, what a fascinating question. I don't see why not. I think in some religions, don't they believe that angels within Catholicism are actual spiritual entities that have never been in a physical body? I'm just asking that.
Absolutely.
That, of course, is within the context of religion, but I don't see why there couldn't be all kinds of intelligences out there that we know nothing about, that, you know, exist and we don't know anything about them, and that there could certainly be energies or consciousnesses or whatever, realms of existence that have nothing to do with being in a physical body. It's not like the human being is the center of everything, you know? So I would think it's definitely a possibility.
He's suggesting maybe some of these, you know, if there is such a thing, might be responsible for perhaps maybe impersonating human beings, making people think that what they're in contact with is, say, the spirit of a departed loved one, when in fact that's not the case. What do you think of that idea?
I hope that's not true.
We're getting out there, that's for sure.
Getting out there, it's pretty speculative, but I don't know why they would want to spend their time like fooling poor bereaved people who are down on earth wanting to contact their dead husband or something. Why do they want to spend their time fooling them and pretending to be that husband? It seems a little far-fetched to me, but we don't have the answers to any of these questions.
Right.
But it's not something I would have ever really speculated about, that there was I mean, you can speculate as to whether it really is that deceased husband that's speaking. It could be that the medium is, however you're getting the information, that it's coming through some other method. And that's a whole other topic, but I wouldn't have ever thought about that method being some consciousness impersonating or pretending to be that person. I just never would have crossed my mind that that would have been happening.
It's quite interesting because we have touched on the idea that perhaps there's a unified field theory of the paranormal and UFOs, in that perhaps whatever this alien phenomena is, it seems to have all the technology required to be able to pull something like that off if it wanted to. But that's another separate kind of speculation or theory. Farlig has one last question, and he asks if you have read Kevin Randall's book, Conversations, that present what Kevin thought was evidence of reincarnation.
Unfortunately, I haven't. I would love to read it. I'm really fascinated by the question of reincarnation. I mainly get my information on that topic from the Department of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia. They have a huge archive. Most of the work that I have studied regarding the question of reincarnation comes from the Department of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia. I've read the work of Ian Stevenson and Jim Tucker, and also case studies. And so I've reported on some of those cases in my book, but I have not read a lot of other stuff. I mean, some. So I'm glad to know about Kevin Randall's book. I'll look it up.
Well, thanks for answering those questions. I'm sure our forum participants are going to be really glad to hear from you on those.
And guess what? You're going to hear more of Leslie Kane on this weekend's episode of After the Paracast, part of your Paracast Plus subscription. For more information, point your browser to theparacast.plus. We've got more to come with Leslie, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Hey, everyone. Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. You heard right, Proactive MD, plus free shipping and a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95, and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear. Or you get your money back. Call now, 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.